The Source Podcast is brought to you by TechPont, a San Antonio company that uses cutting-edge digital technology to elevate marketing and advertising campaigns while reporting on transparent, measurable results. Their custom-built marketing strategies offer complete digital solutions and management. TechPont strives to help businesses connect with customers and effectively grow businesses. More at TechPonte.com.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. 39 days before the deadline to file your taxes. Hopefully you've got your paperwork. Maybe you've already done your taxes. Maybe you've already got your refund. We want to hear how that worked out for you. We're hearing some stories out there that things are a little different this year. So you may not wait until, may not want to wait until the very last day and then get snookered with a strange surprise. As we talk about the taxes today, there are volunteers here in San Antonio that can help you figure out your taxes. And also we've got some experts who can probably handle some of your questions as well. If you want to call in, the number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. How are things going for you so far? Is this tax season? You can also email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at TPR Source. We're joined with Alejandra Sanchez. She is the director of the Volunteer Income Tax Assistance Program called VITA here in San Antonio. Kelly Phillips Erb is with us, a tax lawyer and senior contributor for Forbes. And Joe Rosenberg is a senior research associate at the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center. Welcome all of you this afternoon. And so, first of all, I understood things are kind of changing as we move through the tax season. I heard that there were refunds that were down, and now maybe they're not so down. And any idea what's happening, Kelly Phillips, or with the refund situation?
Well, I think a lot of the refund situation has to do with this shutdown to begin with. The IRS, even though they opened the season on time, they were still a little bit behind at the start. If you look at the data all the way across the board, filing was actually down, as were processing of returns. So I think there was definitely a slowdown overall. And then the numbers were down for refunds, both in terms of overall numbers and dollars. We're finally seeing a little bit of an uptick. I think it was about $40 on the average refund, but we're still seeing a lower number of refunds overall.
And Joe Rosenberg, why is that? What happened? Why are the refunds being monkeyed with?
So here we are in 2019, and what we're sort of finally seeing for the first time is people file under the new tax laws that were passed at the end of 2017. And that was a very large bill that made a number of changes to individual income tax. One of the things, what you're sort of seeing is people file under those new rules, and it's the first time that they're gonna calculate their tax. And so because things are different, their refund situation might have changed.
So the refund may have changed, but what about their overall tax bill that they pay if you look at their entire income, which many people, you know, they don't realize that they got a $5 bump in their paycheck over the course of a year, Joe?
Yeah, exactly. So this is an important distinction to make, that the refund you get is not about the amount of tax you pay. So overall, the bill that was passed in 2017 was a fairly significant tax cut overall. We estimate that about two-thirds of filers will pay lower taxes under the bill. Only about 6% will pay more. The rest would be roughly unchanged. Overall, taxpayers should expect to see an average tax cut of about $1,200 or $1,300. But of course, some of that tax cut has essentially already been delivered to taxpayers in the form of lower withholdings from their employer over the course of last year, 2018. And so now when they're going to file their 2018 returns, they're sort of reconciling how big was their tax change versus how much has already been delivered in the form of higher take-home pay. And that difference is going to be the change in the refund.
Kelly Phillips Erb, since you are a tax lawyer and you're a senior contributor to Forbes, do you think it does make sense for people not to procrastinate. You know, we all never should procrastinate, but, you know, it seems like that procrastination monster is the strongest when it comes to doing your taxes. But really, with an abundance of caution should make us get on that horse a little early?
I think it depends on who you are. I know that the IRS always encourages folks who have fairly straightforward returns to file early for a lot of reasons. One is obviously you want to get your money in hand if you're due a refund as soon as you can. Another reason is to prevent someone else from getting your refund. So it's sort of a little bit of a preventative measure against identity theft if you can file early. But it really does depend on who you are, because there are some actual real obstacles standing in the way to filing early this year. There are some slowdowns in issuing of information returns, for example, with some of the laws that have changed. It affects the way that pass-through businesses and other companies are doing business. And as Joe pointed out, this is really the first season where we're seeing those changes go through. So small business owners, folks who might be affected by changes in the 199A rule, you know, the guidance for that was just issued a couple of months ago. It actually hasn't been around that long. So I think that, you know, I always say it's better to file a complete and thoughtful return, even if you have to file on an extension, rather than a rushed, flawed return. So if you're a person who's really has a straightforward return, so you're a W-2 person, you're going to file a standard deduction, and you're not waiting on anything, you have all your forms in hand, then I would agree, absolutely file early. There's no reason not to. But if you're missing something, if you're still trying to figure out some tweaks, I think it makes sense to, again, kind of take your time and make sure you're doing it right.
Alejandra Sanchez, director of the Volunteer Income Tax Assistance Program, VITA. Are y'all doing anything different this year, getting ready for these adjustments with this new tax laws?
Yes, we our volunteers, we actually extended their training, so they're taking a 20-hour training course instead of 16. And they were all of our volunteers were interested in, of course, the new tax law, and actually explaining to the taxpayer when we're doing the tax return the new 1040, right? Because it's a smaller breakdown and having to explain every credit behind it. We have seen in the VITA program, a lower refund. So people who are married with three children who now don't have that exemption for the dependents, just the standard deduction, are asking, you know, why is their refund lower from previous years, and having to explain that to them as well.
And what's your explanation?
We just let them know, hey, it's a standard deduction. It's, you know, there's no more exemptions out of it. So,
You just say this is the new law.
This is the new law. There's nothing we can do. We try to do our best to get you as much of your refund as possible. But we ask them for their 2017 to kind of show them the difference.
Okay. Yeah, we'll go more into that in just a second. About, since the refunds may be a little bit lower for you, all
correct,
the more reason to go to VITA, yes, to take advantage of your services and to make sure you don't give away more of your refund for unnecessary service. We're going to get into that. But first, I want to get to this caller. The number is 210-614-8980 with Lupe. And Lupe, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi there. I have been in a situation where I'm disabled and I live on Social Security disability. So I haven't made enough money to even file taxes in quite a few years. And I go to VITA every year so they can confirm that. And I'm wondering, what documents should I be keeping throughout the year? I don't throw anything away because I'm afraid to throw out something important. So can you help me with that? Thank you.
All right, Lupe, great question. Kelly Phillips, Herb, can you help Lupe?
Sure. Well, so I'm assuming she is filing a return since she said she's going to VITA, which I will also give a quick plug. I think they're a terrific organization. It's a great service. So if she's filing the return, typically the rule is that you want to hold on to the documents that you use to support the return. So she mentioned that she's getting Social Security, so hold on to your 1099 from Social Security, any other dividend interest, any other income statements, or anything that you would use to support the return, you'd want to hold on to for as long as you hold on to the return, which is usually at least 3 years. If she's not filing a return because she doesn't need to, and there are a number of folks that won't have to file a return for 2019, If you don't need to file the tax return, I would still hold on to the documents that would have supported your not filing. So, for example, if the only income you receive is your Social Security statement, you know, I would hold on to it for the same period of time. I always, again, just because VITA is available, I tell my taxpayers or folks that come to me that if they're not sure, they should file anyway. Because if you don't file a tax return, the statute of limitations never starts running. But once you file, you kind of start the clock. So I always think that it's a good idea to file. And then on the flip side of that, even if you don't owe tax, there's a chance that you might qualify for certain kinds of credits so that you could get tax back in the form of a refund. So even if you don't need to file, you might want to file for, again, a lot of reasons, but getting a refund is one of them.
And Joe Rosenberg, we heard about the child tax credit, which is not part of the form anymore. What happened there? And is that something that people that became part of their paycheck bump, or do we just not provide that anymore?
Well, no, the child credit still exists. Personal exemption, the exemption you get for your dependents has gone away. But the child tax credit can still be claimed for 2018. It was actually enlarged to partially compensate for the loss of the dependent exemption, but it was increased from a maximum amount of from $1,000 to $2,000. It's potentially refundable, but it's only available for children less than 17.
And we have an earned income tax credit. That's still there?
Yes. The 2017 tax bill did not make any changes to the earned income tax credit. So we'll be familiar for taxpayers that are used to claiming that.
So what are we seeing with the burden of taxes, federal income taxes overall? Who's really paying and not paying taxes, Joe?
Yeah, well, I think the key thing here is sort of the difference between last year and this year. The 2017 and 2018, again, attributable to the new tax laws. And again, what we're seeing is that the tax bill did reduce taxes for most people across the board. Generally, the tax cuts as a percentage of income were larger for higher income people, people that could take advantage of the pass-through deduction, the 20% pass-through deduction that Kelly mentioned, and from the lower tax rates. But many taxpayers will pay less taxes as a result of the bill.
Right, but I'm asking you this because you're with the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center, so here's a policy question. We were told that these tax cuts would pay for themselves with boosting the economy. Did we see that?
So no, I mean, the answer is no. I mean, I think it is true that the administration and a few sort of fringe economists made that claim. I don't think any serious analyst saw this as anything other than a tax cut that would reduce tax revenues, and that is, in fact, what we've seen. We see corporate revenues down significantly, especially. There can be beneficial effects on the economy from reducing taxes, and we have seen good economic performance. It's hard to connect that directly to the tax cut, rather than just a continuation of a strong economic expansion. And it is possible for revenue to recoup some of the tax cut, but I don't think any credible analyst thinks that the economic growth can pay for the whole thing.
Right, and the federal deficit continues to swell. We're going to take a break. The number to call in with your tax question, 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. When we'll come back, we'll talk about some tax scams out there, how to protect yourself from that. and other questions you might come up with. 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Have you filed your federal income taxes yet for the year? Did you get a refund or a big surprise? Was it what you expected? Are you having trouble understanding the changes in the tax code? You can call in and ask our experts. Ask them your tough questions. They've got some great brains here. They'll help you figure it out. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Michael is on the line, and Michael, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I appreciate you taking my call. My questions are based on, I'm a small business owner, self-employed, and my wife is as well, real estate agent. And my biggest concern is we're paying 30 to 35% taxes currently last year, and I'm trying to figure out how that would affect me this year. Is there going to be a break in that action?
All right, Michael, thank you for the call. Kelly Phillips Erb with tax lawyer and senior contributor for Forbes.
Sure. Well, this is my very lawyerly answer again, that it kind of depends on who you are and where you fall, because you mentioned that you were a small business owner. And this year, as we've talked about a couple times, there is this 20% deduction available for not only pass-throughs, but folks who file a Schedule C. But, you know, as with anything in tax law, there's a lot of exceptions and limits. So you have to kind of drill down to see how much, if at all, you benefit. So the basic rule is taxpayers with income that is below $315,000 for joint returns and $157,500 for other taxpayers could take advantage of this 20% pass-through deduction that we've been talking about. If you're above those amounts, then you start to run into limitations based on not only your income, but your occupation. And I say that as one of the folks whose occupation is named, attorneys and some other service providers are not allowed to take full benefit. We actually have some phase outs and limitations over those dollar amounts. So you should, if you're under those amounts, you should see a little bit of a break this year because you'll be entitled to this cut. And the reason for the cut, just to kind of make it, to make you understand why, because I think sometimes the why is important to understand, is that, you know, we had corporate tax cuts. And a lot of the small business owners like yourself, which really kind of power our economy, were not happy that we were going to be giving away corporate tax cuts, but they weren't going to be able to take advantage of it on the individual side if you file an individual tax return when you're a business. And so there's this 20% cut, up to 20%, that affects your business income that was put in by Congress. It's what people are calling the pass-through deduction or the 199A deduction, so that you can also get a break. So depending on where your income falls and again, what your occupation is, you should see a little bit of a cut.
But you have to understand how this works, how you compensate yourself with the business matters, even though you're still getting the money, it's just going to be going through a different format. So people need to know this, and I guess they need professional help when you've got those types of tax problems, Kelly. So make sure you got someone who knows how to do this.
Yeah, no, I would absolutely, you know, obviously it sounds a little self-assuring to say that I think you should use a tax professional, but I do think that if you have a potentially complicated return, especially something that would be affected by this 199A deduction, I recommend using a tax professional because there's a lot of nuance involved. However, there is a lot of really good software out there, and the software does have, like, most of the software has an interview type interface that can walk you through some of these steps. So again, depending on what your income level is, if you're below those thresholds that I mentioned, you can probably rely on tax software. But, you know, again, it's just kind of my nature is I think there's a lot of really smart people out there doing tax returns that do it for a living. So I would take advantage of that because I know it can cost money, or maybe not, you know, depending on whether you qualify for a VITA or not. But, you know, in many cases, I find on my end, because I work in a lot of compliance work, that taxpayers are actually a little nervous by nature, and they underdeduct. So they actually don't take advantage of some of the deductions and credits that might be available, especially for business owners. So sometimes investing in a tax professional will actually turn around and give you a boost. So, you know, that's my long-winded answer to say that I think a tax professional is a really good idea.
All right, let's go to the next caller. The number is 210-614-8980. If you've got a question about filing your taxes this year, as we hear that there has been some changes. Let's go to Christina. And Christina, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, my name is Christina, and I wanted to ask, so my children are all grown up, but now my children have children. And my question is, why was that? You know, once your child who's still attending high school at the age of 17, you can't have them as, you know, as a deductible.
Okay, and I guess all right. And so Joe Rosenberg, you're a policy guy, senior fellow associate at the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center. Can you help Christina understand the logic?
Yeah. So again, in previous years, for any dependent, and that could include children or non-child dependents, there was a dependent exemption. So you got to essentially subtract out about $4,000 from your taxable income. That was eliminated. And somewhat made up for by a couple other changes. One was the increase in the standard deduction. The other was the increase in the child credit. And a related piece of that is there is now, in lieu of the dependent exemption for children not eligible for the child credit, there is now a $500 credit for other dependents. This is a new thing. So if you're not used to claiming the child credit because your dependents are not 16 or under, you now have to know that there is this new credit out there, and that may or may not make up for the loss of the dependent exemption.
So it sounds like you're saying, Joe, is that frequently when they come up with new tax laws, they'll take one thing away, but they'll put other things back. So there is some sort of give and take happening here.
Yeah, I mean, again, there were a lot of moving pieces to the bill, and exactly, some of it was rearranging benefits from, you know, moving benefits from an exemption to a credit. But the important thing for taxpayers is, that the rules are different this year, and so you do want to make sure you consult a tax professional or the VITA site to make sure that you're not just thinking that pulling last year's return and thinking it'll be exactly like that.
So Alexandra Sanchez, director of VITA, Volunteer Income Tax Assistance Program here in San Antonio. Tell me more about the program. How can people access you? Who should be seeking out VITA?
Sure. So what our program does is we do free tax preparation for families and individuals who make $55,000 or less. We do all sorts, W-2, 1099-Rs, small businesses, and the small businesses are limited to expenses of $25,000 and less. And we have a site on every side of town, north side, west side, east side, and south side. They can look at our hours of operation per that site. We have 19 sites throughout San Antonio. They can visit our website at vitasa.org, or they can call 211, and a representative can refer them to the site that's closest to them.
So you partner with Goodwill. I see
Correct.
A lot of your sites there.
Yes, we're in like public libraries, community centers, St. Philip's College, Palo Alto College, and here at Catholic Charities as well. We have one at the Guadalupe Community Center.
So how can you provide the service for free?
Meaning, they come in.
I mean, you got people, you got expenses.
Yes, so they come in, and we have a clerical there to make sure they have.
But who pays for VITA?
Oh, United Way is we're a VITA coalition, so it's made up with the City of San Antonio, United Way, and Catholic Charities. So we receive grants to provide this wonderful program, and we have volunteers that provide the services by their time, with their time.
Okay, and you have, these volunteers have, some of them are retired tax preparers.
Correct. Retired CPAs. We have students as well that are in school to become a CPA or accounting majors as well.
All right, let me take a caller, and this is Calvin. Hi, Calvin. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I had a question about the online tax preparation services that are available and if those are recommended. You know, I was trying to figure out if I'm going to do that this year online or go with a higher tax professional.
All right. Thank you for that. And Kelly Phillips Erb, any ideas?
Sure. Well, if you're wondering about, you know, reputable software, and you meet the income criteria, which I believe is around $66,000, you can actually go to the IRS website and use their free file service. And what they've done is the IRS has partnered with a number of tax software preparers to offer you their programs for free. So it some of them have additional restrictions. Some of them offer federal and state. Some just offer federal. But as a first step, I would definitely recommend at least heading over to the IRS website and checking it out and seeing if that might work for you. Because, again, that's free. And it's online filing. And these are names of companies that you'll recognize. And they've had to be certified by IRS as being up to snuff for purposes of the free file software. Outside of that, I think it's really a personal decision. I always say, well, first of all, I actually have my taxes prepared and I'm a tax professional. Like, I actually pay someone to do my taxes, and I used to do them myself. And I joke that it was, you know, one of the reasons that my husband and I have stayed married is because I agreed to get a CPA. Because, you know, around the time of tax season, right, there's also a lot of stuff going on. And so you want to think about what your time is worth and what your level of frustration might be.
And peace of mind. Peace of mind is another big part of that. We're going to take a break. The number is 210-614-8980. The Source continues talking about taxes after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about taxes. You got to do them. And how you might as well do them right, do them safe, do them quick, and see what you can do about maximizing your return, your refund. 210-614-8980 is the number to call if you got a question or a comment. And Dan is on the line. Dan, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I am a sole proprietor, self-employed, and I also have a couple of rent houses. And I was told that the 20% pass-through somehow can apply to your rentals, too. And I'm just wondering if it's true and how it works, basically.
All right, Dan, thank you for that. And so Kelly Phillips Erb, tax lawyer, senior contributor for Forbes Rental Properties. Is that a pass-through possibility?
So that's a really interesting question, because earlier I mentioned that the IRS had just offered guidance a couple of months ago on this deduction, and a very significant discussion has been had around real estate and what's deductible, especially as it is related to, and I'm not sure from your question if you're one of these folks, but folks where your small business is also tied to real estate. So the short answer is yes. I actually find that the Section 199A rules are very beneficial for folks in real estate. But there are some very specific rules that you have to follow, and you have to meet the criteria. So, you know, I would definitely talk to somebody. It would be my suggestion that's a tax professional, to see if you are one of the folks who qualify to take advantage of the deduction. But generally, the answer is yes.
All right. We got an email from Jesse. With all the recent tax changes, is it worth considering a CPA in hopes of maximizing additional tax breaks that traditional tax software might miss? My income is W-2. My wife is Schedule C. My hope is that securing a CPA services would pay for itself and net my family more in tax breaks versus using software. So is that the calculus that people really need to be trying to figure out? How much do I typically pay someone to do my taxes? If you've never paid for anyone to do that before, it might seem like this isn't my kind of thing. But, you know, maybe they should consider that. Let me go to Joe Rosenberg, and if you can get your reaction to this first. And tell us, you're with the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center. When should people think about getting a pro?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's also important to distinguish between the, you know, different levels of paid tax preparers. I mean, I think Kelly's advice was right. I think for the majority of taxpayers, they're probably going to be just fine using any of the standard softwares, software preparers. And again, depending on their income, they may even qualify for free e-filing. But those softwares are very good at picking up most things, even the sort of very, very narrow and targeted deductions and credits. I guess from a big picture, we would like a tax system to be as least burdensome to taxpayers, within reason. It's always going to require this sort of filing every year and putting everything down. But I don't think taxpayers should feel like they have to go out and pay for a more expensive option, or that necessarily they would get a different answer in terms of the taxes they would pay. But then again, with the caveat, if you have a complicated business situation or something, you might benefit from a professional even beyond your tax filing, but maybe just in terms of how you do your business, you might benefit from a professional advisor.
And Kelly Phillips Erb, are there any red flags that will alert IRS to my return if I use a computer software versus hiring a professional or doing it myself? Or doing it in crayon? Is there anything that really going to like catch the IRS's eye and say, we need to look at this guy and audit him?
No, I don't think it makes a difference in an audit risk whether you use a tax software or a tax preparer or if you self-prepare, so long as you know what you're doing. There are some audit flags that might catch the IRS's attention, and I don't know that I'd recommend doing it in crayon. But it's not, I don't think that when you look across the board, you can say, one is better than the other on the audit side, assuming, of course, that you have a qualified preparer. I mean, the IRS does look at data and linked data and try to make connections. And if you're using a preparer who maybe isn't reputable and has maybe engaged in other behaviors that the IRS is watching, that's when you get nervous. If that preparer is giving a lot of a certain kind of credit that maybe they shouldn't be advising is appropriate. So, obviously it's going to be fact specific, but I don't think that there's any difference. When the IRS gets a return, they're not going to say, this one is TurboTax and this was a CPA, let's flag the CPA one.
Okay, let's go to another caller. This is Tom. And Tom, hi, Tom. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, yes, I just had a quick question here. I retired recently, and I took a big lump sum, and it put me at $515,000. I was wondering, could I file separate married with me and my wife, because that would drop me down to $450,000? Would that work?
Okay, Tom, so we're talking about tax brackets and doing some fancy footwork there. Kelly, what do you think?
So my short answer, without knowing any more, because I don't know anything about your wife or your income, your other income and deductions, is that it is rarely better to file married filing separately, especially if you're an itemizer. So it's not just a number calculus. You're going to want to run through some other scenarios, but it's rarely a good idea to file. I shouldn't say rarely. It is not as usual, usually as advantageous to file married filing separately than filing jointly, especially if you're an itemizer, because then you have to make sure that you both itemize. You can't divide that up so that one itemizes and one takes the standard. And you also aren't eligible for some credits. And there are other tax attributes that are affected when you opt for married filing separately. So I would not advise looking just at the rates. I would run the numbers and look at the bigger picture.
Alexander Sanchez, Director of Volunteer Income Tax Assistance Program, VITA. People want to know that when they come to your services, that the people that have volunteered with you have been screened, and that this is not going to, their information is not going to, you know, end up in some sort of scam possibility. What do you do? Are these people that are screened and vetted?
Yes, definitely. They definitely are, and they are IRS certified. So when they go through the training process, they are certified through the IRS. And then we have we use an IRS provided software. So all the information that's included in our software when we're preparing the taxes is very safe. It's very secured. You need a simple identification number every 7 days that we log into the software. So for their security's sake, it puts them a little more at ease.
What are some of these scam problems that are out there? I know that there's identity theft, that some people have filed their taxes and then they realize someone already collected their refund. How does that happen, Joe Rosenberg?
So that is an unfortunate thing that we see, and I mean some of it just comes from having some bit of information about a taxpayer. So if for example you know somebody's Social Security number and that they have a W-2, or you somehow got a hold of somebody's or you know if these nefarious people somehow get a hold of somebody's W-2, they could essentially file a fraudulent return and either claim back the withholding amount or even claim refundable tax credits based on their dependent children. It is something that the IRS is very vigilant to and tries to keep tabs on. And that's, for example, one of the reasons why the IRS holds refundable tax credits. I think they just started releasing those last week or the week before, so that they can do more matching on their end. It's a reminder that the tax filing system is sort of all based on Social Security numbers, and it's a reminder that you want to keep that personal information as secure as possible.
And Kelly Phillips Erb, if you do your taxes and you find out that this is not really optimal for me, I want to make some changes. Should people follow up and take a look at their withholding, take a look at their W-4, make sure so that a year later they're not, you know, things don't get a repeat?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one of the things, especially if you're not happy with the result at the end of the year, you want to look at what is different this year from last year. And, it could be tax changes, but it also could be that maybe you aren't withholding enough and you need to go back and get a W-4 and redo the withholding to make sure that it makes sense for this year. Maybe your situation has changed too. I mean, a lot of times we kind of get programmed into you, if you're working for someone, you give them your W-4 and then, you never look at it again. But maybe you get married, you have kids, or as the caller indicated earlier, maybe your child has aged out of the tax credit for the child tax credit. So there's lots of stuff that can happen that isn't related to your wages that you should be aware of. So definitely take a second look.
And one last time in 10 seconds, Alexander Sanchez, Volunteer Income Tax Assistance Program. It's free. You do walk-ins, but you encourage people to register online?
No, check out our website, vitasa.org, to look at the closest location to them.
And you can figure it out from there, and it's all pretty easy. All right, want to thank you so much. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.